Our gospel today is John 9, verses 1 through 41. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some were saying, "It is he." Others were saying, "No, but it is someone like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." But they kept asking him, "Then how are your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' Then I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight. He said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, then I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?" And they were divided. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened." He said, "He is a prophet." The Jesus did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that he now sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Here's an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and are you trying to teach us?" And they drove him out. Jesus heard this, that they had driven him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not blind, are we?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have sin. But now that you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." This is the word of the Lord.
Well, it certainly is a long reading. The other gospel writers would have taken this miracle and had done it up very shortly, just the very first part where Jesus is healed, right? They would have just recounted Jesus is walking along with these people. They see the man born blind. They have this discussion about why it is, and then Jesus heals the guy. That would have been the end of the story normally, right? And it would have made it a very interesting point. At least I think it's an interesting point. And what is that point? Well, why did Jesus have to put mud on this guy's eyes? That was yucky, right? Why couldn't he just touch it and say, all right, you're healed? Well, because I think it's supposed to get us thinking to another time when God played around in the mud a little bit. At the very beginning of the Bible, when God created human beings, how did he do it? He reached down into the mud and formed it into the body, and then breathed the breath of life into it. When God is playing around the mud, it's a new creation. So what is happening here is not just that his eyes are being opened and his sight is being restored, but that it is actually a new creation. Nothing less than that. The same power of the first creation is available right here for this guy right now. Well, that would be enough, but why does John go on and on? Well, because he believes that the restoration of sight is only a start, and a new creation needs to be ongoing. That a new creation is incomplete unless it results in a relationship of trust and love between the Creator and the creature, right? The implications needed to play out and be discovered. This man, the recovery of his sight is like a pebble dropped into still water. The ripples go out and out and have consequences far beyond that. And that's what John is interested in here. The second thing I think he wants us to understand is that God comes to us disguised as our lives. I like that. God comes to us disguised as our lives. How else would he come to us? We often think we need to run off to some monastery and pray. We have to go to a mountaintop and have an enlightened experience. Well, here, this man had more to discover, but it was only through interaction with other people that he was able to grow in his faith. Interaction with his neighbors, with the Pharisees, the religious leaders. This is the way life is supposed to be. Our lives are intended to have a pattern. And there are two halves of life in our spiritual journey. Spiritual teachers should tell you this. The first half of life is spent building a container for yourself, so to speak. Gaining a healthy sense of self. Accomplishing all sorts of things and getting recognized for that. So the tasks of the first half of life are this. You get an education, right? You get a good job. You meet someone to marry. You start a family. You buy a house. You buy a car. You further your career. All of these things are the tasks of the first half of life, right? The first half of life is about learning the rules. What's right and wrong, what's black and white, how do you fit in, how do you be a decent human being? And all that is very, very important. And we need to put our best effort towards learning those tasks in the first half of life. But there reaches a point when all of those things, education, job, home, car, career, and even the rules, that you reach a point when they can't sustain you. When they're going to disappoint you, when they're going to let you down, when all of that is not going to be enough, when you need something more than accomplishments and success. A favorite teacher of mine says that after the age of about 35 or 40, success teaches you absolutely nothing. If you keep having success, that's an okay thing, but it just feeds your ego. It doesn't teach you how to be a better person, a greater follower of Christ. So life comes at us and moves us on to the second stage of our life, of our journey. When all the old ways don't work anymore, it gives us a chance to let go of those things and the real joy of receiving other things from God. The key task of the second half of life is giving away all that you've been able to accumulate in the first half of life. To give away your wealth, to give away wisdom, to give away love, to give away the life lessons that you've learned. That's the task of the second half of life. It's the joy of not having to be in control of everything and rather let yourself be lost in God's care and love. You know, the religious leaders of this story about the blind born blind had failed to move on to the second stage of life, hadn't they? They were so caught up in this first stage of their life. When they were dealing with this miracle of Jesus, it was all about control. It was all about the rules, right? It was all about getting their own way. They should have moved on in their life, and yet the real tragedy is here. They see God's creative act in the world, and they're opposed to it because they aren't in control. That's why they couldn't cope with this guy. He was able to let God's will be done in his life. He was discovering God present and disguised in his life. So let's look at this interesting journey that he had. There's five stages, five steps in it that we have here. And you can trace really very, very clearly what this journey is like because he's tracing all of our journeys in life. The first stage in it was his first encounter with Jesus, and we've talked about that, where Jesus healed him. Well, that led immediately to the second step there, and that was his encounter with his neighbors. Now, they looked at him, and they saw him with his sight back, and they assumed something like that can't happen, so they started arguing back and forth over, is this the guy? Is this who the same guy? And finally the guy goes, yeah, I am. And they asked him, well, who did this to you? And he says, a man called Jesus. And they said, do you know where he is? And he says, no, I don't. So where does he start in his journey? He simply knows there's a man called Jesus, but he doesn't know where to find him again. Not a lot of information, but at least Jesus has made himself aware to him. It's a good place to start, right? But life moves him on. Notice who comes onto the stage to help him in his journey here. It's his first encounter with the religious leaders, the Pharisees. They're totally lost in their own rules in the first half of life here. They ignore this wonderful miracle that has happened. Why? Because it happened on the Sabbath day, and you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath day. And technically, performing a miracle was a violation of the Sabbath day, so they can't stand it. And they're jumping all over this poor guy. They're asking him to defend Jesus. And it's interesting, after having some time to reflect on this, after being challenged a little bit in his faith by other people, he comes to a different assessment of who Jesus is. And they ask, who do you think he is? And he says this, I think he's a prophet. He's moved along, right? A prophet was an ordinary person, just like you and me, but someone who had received a message from God to share with other people. So this guy is moving on with his faith here. But he's got a ways to go. The Pharisees don't like their answers with this guy, so they call in his parents, and they have that little crazy scene where they are arguing whether this is really the guy who has been healed. It was really their son. And it gets crazy, you know, they're asking, well, how did this happen? And the poor parents are scared to death. And they finally just go, well, ask him. So the Pharisees drag this poor guy onto the carpet the second time. For the Pharisees, there is no progress in their spiritual understanding. They're stuck. For this man who had been born blind, there is progress. And so they questioned him again, the same old stuff. And now listen to his assessment of Jesus. He's moved farther down the path right here. He says, if this man, Jesus, were not from God, he could not have done anything like this. Interesting. Suddenly he's absolutely clear that only God's presence in Jesus' life could allow this miracle to happen in his life. Well, he's ready to make his final step in his journey here. And in order to do that, Jesus needs to come on the scene again. I love this. At the end of it, after all this hassle in his life, Jesus comes back to him to seal the deal, so to speak. Jesus sought him out and says to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God, the Son of Man?" And the guy says, "Show me him so that I can believe." And Jesus says, "You're looking right at him." And what is the guy's final response? He says, "My Lord, I believe." And he worshiped. He'd made the whole journey there from the beginning, just where he's some man and didn't even know where he could find him, to the end, he was God's very son, my Lord, and he was worthy of his worship. You know, other faith traditions have recognized this journey in life, the two stages of life as well. A couple years ago, I came across an interesting tradition from, it's from Japanese. There's a set of famous paintings, 10 paintings, called 10 Ox Herder Pictures. And they can be used to teach about a number of things, but I think they teach about this journey just beautifully. In the first picture, there are these Chinese paintings, you know, and there's a little boy, and he's searching for an ox. He's heard there's an ox. He doesn't know where it is. I take it the ox means God, but he doesn't know where the God is, just like the man born blind, right? In the second picture, this little boy spots some footprints of the ox in the ground there. He gets a little hint of this God that might actually be there. He gets a path to follow, as we all do at some point in our life, don't we? We're baptized. We hear a sermon. We read the scriptures. Somebody tells us about faith. We get some glimpses of God. Finally, as he follows the footprints, off in the distance, in the third picture, the little boy sees the ox, but he only sees him at a distance and from behind. So he has confirmed, okay, I know there is a God, but I don't have a clear, full picture of him. Well, the little guy in the fourth picture is bent on getting this, capturing the ox, getting a hold of God, and so he literally gets a lasso and lassos this big ox, and it's quite a struggle, and the ox is kind of pulling the little guy around, but he's got a hold of him. In the fifth picture, the little guy has pulled out his flute, and he's taming the ox. He's soothing the ox so that they can be together. And in the sixth picture, the little guy is on the back of the ox, and he's riding home playing his flute. It's all good. He thinks, look, I've worked hard. I've tried to grab hold of God and understand God and tame God and get him under my control. And now my life will just go on because I can ride my faith to the end. That's the first half of life. That's the first half of the journey, right? But guess what? The seventh picture shows the little guy back at his home and the ox isn't there. The ox is probably in the stable. The little guy has had to transcend the ox. What does he mean by that? He's had to transcend the notion that he now has God tamed and can ride him. Needs to go beyond his limited knowledge that can only be gained by his insights and hard work. Now, he needs to get a bigger view of God. God as God is. So the ox is transcended. In the eighth picture, there's nothing. It's blank because the young boy even has to transcend himself. He can no longer assume that what he learned only on his own about God is sufficient. He needs to leave that behind and open himself up totally to God as in God is in himself. And so in the ninth picture, it shows, you know, one of those beautiful Japanese pictures of a nature, and it symbolizes that finally, by letting go of what he thought was real, he was able to go to the source and let God's love and grace touch him directly in a new and deeper way. And in the final and last picture, there's the young guy, but he's grown up now. He's grown up, an old guy, and he's returned to the world, and the picture shows him in the marketplace, simply able now to share his wisdom and his light, and his truth in the world. And guess who comes up with him to start his journey through life? Another young boy. It was the same story as the man born blind, starting out just knowing a guy named Jesus to going to absolute faith and worship of him. So where are you in your life's journey today? You know, it really doesn't matter where you are, as long as you recognize that there is a journey, as long as you know that there is more, as long as you understand that no matter how far you may have come on that journey, there is still farther to go. There is always more of God to experience, always a deeper faith and trust, always more worship. That will never end until the very end of our lives, and thank God for that. And the only other thing that we need to know as we go on this journey is that the place to look for guidance, the place to look for God is in our own lives, in our own events, because God is coming to us always, disguised as our lives, to move us forward. Amen.